We're studying in the 20th chapter of 2 Samuel, and we're ready to begin at the 4th verse. At this point of our study, David has defeated the rebellion of Absalom. Absalom is now dead. He now has another rebellion, though, on his hands, led by a man named Sheba. And it seems that the 10 tribes are following Sheba, so that only Judah and possibly Simeon are now backing David. And this man, Sheba, has created quite a force against David, so that David and his faithful followers are having to really devise a means to put this rebellion down. So beginning in the 4th verse, "Then said the king to Amasa." Now Amasa, we remember, is the nephew of David, but he has been selected by David to be his chief general now. He was the commander-in-chief of the forces of Absalom whenever they were opposing David. He was a traitor at that time. Now he is a turncoat. He's turned around and he is following David, and David has put him in the place of Joab. And possibly the reason is that David is very displeased with Joab for having been the one that killed Absalom. So he turns to Amasa and he says to him, "Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days, and be thou here present." So now time is of the essence. They need to make some very fast preparations to put down this rebellion of Sheba. And so David says, "Assemble me the men of Judah within 3 days." Now they have come back to Jerusalem with David in triumph. He is the king, but it seems that the men of Judah are slow to assemble to put down this rebellion. They like to follow David while things are nice and easy and peaceful, but whenever the time of trouble comes, they're hard to find, it seems. So he gives him 3 days to get the men together. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. So it seemed that it took him longer than 3 days. He was not able to get the people together, either out of his slowness, out of his inability to accomplish the task, or out of the slowness of the people to want to do, out of the backwardness of the men of Israel to want to follow after this cause of putting down the rebellion. So he took longer than the time appointed. Well, David felt that he couldn't wait any longer. So in verse 6, David said to Abishai. Now Abishai was another cousin. He was a brother to Joab, and he had been certainly very prominent in the battles of Israel in the past. It says, "Now shall Sheba the son of Bichri do us more harm than did Absalom." In other words, the more time we give Sheba, the more harm he's going to do us, the more force he's going to have behind him. And we'll not be able to conquer him if we keep on waiting. He's going to do more harm than Absalom did. So he tells Abishai, "Take thou the Lord's servants and pursue after him, lest he get him fenced cities and escape us." The more time we give Sheba, the more fortification he's going to have. He's going to have fenced cities. It will be impossible for us to overcome him. And so now we must act swiftly. So he tells Abishai to take the forces that he has, the faithful people that are here, this tried army that David had with him over beyond Jordan. Don't wait for the rest of the men of Judah to come. You go after him now, because the longer we wait, the more strength he's going to gain. So verse 7 says, "And there went out after him Joab's men, and the Cherethites, and the Pelethites, and all the mighty men, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue after Sheba the son of Bichri." Now these would be the men, of course, that fought with David when he was putting down Absalom's rebellion, and anybody else that wanted to come along. It's just that the rest of the nation still had not been mustered by Amasa. Verse 8, "When they were at the great stone which is in Gibeon, Amasa went before them." So they did meet at a place up in Gibeon, which is called the great stone. And when they got to this place of the great stone, Amasa went before them. That is, Amasa caught up with them, with the men that he had gotten together for the battle. Now we have then Amasa, who is the duly appointed general of David's army, now in the field with the men. But we also have Joab here, And Joab is not taking this matter lightly, that he has been deposed by David, that he has been demoted from this position of being the chief general. And so the story further says, "And Joab's garment that he had put on was girded unto him, and upon it a girdle with a sword fastened upon his loins and the sheath thereof, and as he went forth it fell out." So Joab had his garment girded. That is, it was tightened up so that he could fight or work with it. It was no longer going to be a hindrance to him. And they also had a sword that seemed to have a sheath that was too big for it, so that it would fall out, just accidentally fall out on the ground. He did this on purpose, so that he then could have the sword in his hand and not look like he had drawn the sword to fight, but that he was simply picking the sword up to replace it back into its sheath. And verse 9 says, "And Joab said to Amasa, Art thou in health, my brother?" So he deceptively meets Amasa and pretends like he is inquiring about his health. He calls him his brother, although he is his cousin. He acts very friendly toward him, and this is a most deceptive act on the part of Joab, because Joab earnestly wants to kill Amasa. But he says, "Art thou in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard and the right hand to kiss him. So he goes through the motions now of kissing Amasa, really throwing him off guard. But Amasa took no heed to the sword that was in Joab's hand. Joab had picked up the sword that had fallen out as though it was a harmless weapon that he was simply going to replace, but he still had it in his hand. Amasa took no heed of it, so he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. Now this phrase that says he smote him in the fifth rib actually should be translated that he smote him in the abdomen, some place in the abdomen he was smitten with the sword. And as it further says, that his bowels went out to the ground, would indicate that this was the abdominal area that he was struck in. And he just struck him with one blow. He struck him not again, but it was a fatal blow. He died. So we have now another murder by Joab. And Joab, as we know, is very capable of this. He murdered Abner. He assisted David in the murder of Bathsheba's husband, Uriah the Hittite. And he also was very instrumental in the killing of Absalom. And now we see him committing a treacherous murder in killing his cousin Amasa. He did this out of envy and out of jealousy and strife, because Amasa had replaced him as being the general-in-chief of David's army. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now then we find that Joab takes over along with Abishai. They are the commanders of the army, and Joab is going to be the chief leader, it seems. They do this on their own. David hasn't appointed them to do this, but at this particular time it seems to be the most expedient thing to do, to get the job of the battle over with, to get the pursuing of Sheba taken care of. And they go ahead and do this. "And one of Joab's men stood by him and said, He that favoreth Joab, and he that is for David, let him go after Joab. So he has a man to stand there and proclaim to all the soldiers, to those that should come up from the rear, those who were still mustering, that if you want to favor Joab, and if you're in favor of David, then follow Joab. Joab's the leader now. He's going to be the commander. And Amasa wallowed in blood in the midst of the highway. We can see the sad condition Amasa's in. He has had his side ripped open with a sword. His bowels have fallen out, and he's now wallowing in blood in the midst of the highway. And this would be a very striking and startling scene for somebody to come up on. And so as the people who were following after the army, as they came up and saw this, why, they were startled by it. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa out of the highway into the field and cast a cloth upon him, when he saw that everyone that came by him stood still. In other words, when they saw this side of Amasa laying there in the highway, they gathered around and stood as though they were simply startled spectators, and they weren't going on with the business of being soldiers in the army. So they took him out of the way, took him out of the highway, put him out in the field, and covered him with a cloth. When he was removed out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue after Sheba, the son of Bichri. So now they're going on to the mission that they originally started to do. There's been a murder committed. The commander-in-chief has been slain by Joab. Joab has replaced him. And we just see more of the troubles of David being multiplied here. Although this army is going to be successful in its pursuit after Sheba. So beginning in verse 14, we have the conclusion of the story of Sheba. And he went through all the tribes of Israel unto Abel, and to Beth Maacah, and all the Beerites. Now this man, this rebel, he went through all the tribes of Israel. That is, he sought after all the followers that he could get. He went through all the tribes seeking support, but it seemed that he got very little support when it came right down to it. Many people wanted to follow him in his rebellion, but yet when it came down to the fighting for it and the facing of David and his forces, not very many people seemed to be with Sheba. And all the Beerites. Now the Beerites are a group of people who are from Benjamin who were following him. He did have some faithful followers, men from Benjamin. And they were gathered together and went also after him. And they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacah. Now all the people that did follow Sheba, the ones he could gain from all the nation, were now with him. And he came to this place in Abel of Beth Maacah. This is in the northernmost part of the nation of Palestine. It is located in the tribe of Naphtali, close to the city of Dan. And this word Abel means meadow. It's a prefix for several cities. Beth means house, so it has something to do with the meadow house of Maacah. And so here's where Sheba went with his followers. They cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench. And all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. So they took refuge. Sheba and his followers took refuge in this city of Abel Beth Maacah. And here Joab and his army now batters the wall to throw it down. They are attacking the city. They besiege the city. And they are ultimately going to be victorious if they are able to continue like they're doing now. But we have an event that occurs that changes the course of this battle. A very interesting thing that happens. Verse 16 says, "Then cried a wise woman out of the city." Here's a woman that was a wise woman. And we'd like to emphasize the fact that women are just as wise, and sometimes wiser, it seems, than men. There's no lack of the ability of a person just because they happen to be of one sex or the other. And this woman seemed to be the wisest person in the whole city. She's the only one who took the proper route for trying to settle this thing peaceably. The elders of the city didn't seem to have enough interest or enough wisdom to do this. Or maybe they were so afraid of Sheba that they were afraid to make any move. But this woman saw what was going to happen. The city was going to be destroyed. It was going to be in the very midst of a terrible battle. And this would do nothing but bring about death and destruction to the inhabitants of the city, who were really more or less innocent. It wasn't their will that Sheba do what he was doing. So she took matters in her own hands and negotiates with Joab. She cried, "Hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither that I may speak with thee." So she asked for a conference with Joab. Joab, the commander of the army, the captain. "And when he was come near unto her, the woman said, Art thou Joab? And he answered, I am he." No doubt Joab was a famous person. He was well known here because he had been the leader of David's army for many years now. "Then she said unto him, Hear the words of thine handmaid. And he answered, I do hear." So now they have an agreement to talk. And of course, before any conflict can be settled, before any type of opposing forces can come to some kind of an agreement, they have to first of all agree to talk, agree to hear, agree to listen to what each other have to say. And so he says, I do hear. Then she spake, saying. Now notice the reasoning and the pleadings that the woman uses, how she gets Joab to see what is the rational thing to do. She spake, saying, they were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel at Abel. What she's saying here is that this city is famous for its wisdom, for its ability to settle disputes. In the olden times, when there was a problem, they came to Abel to ask counsel. They came to Abel to find out what should be done. And so they ended the matter. When there was a dispute in ancient times or earlier times, when they'd come to Abel and find out the counsel of the wise people of Abel, then that ended the matter. This is a city known, well known for its ability to have wisdom. Now she's trying to get Joab to see what kind of a city this is that he's attacking here. That this is not some little minor city, but to lose Abel is going to be to lose a valuable asset for the entire nation of Israel. So she says in verse 19, I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. This city is actually a peaceable city. We're faithful to David. We're not rebels. We're not trying to do anything to disrupt the kingdom. And I represent those that are of a peaceable nature and that are faithful. And I'm one of them. And then she says, thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Stop and think what you're doing, Joab. You're destroying a city here, a valuable asset to this entire nation, to this entire kingdom. This is a mother in Israel. This city is one that succors the smaller cities round about it. It gives nourishment and comfort and guidance and support to the other cities in this area. This is an important center for this whole area of the nation, and you're trying to destroy it. So she reasoned with Joab to stop and consider what you do before you do it, because you're destroying something here that's valuable to this whole region of the nation. And it doesn't make sense to bring this kind of destruction upon this city. And this woman is actually asking Joab to do something that the law provided for. In Deuteronomy 20, verse 10, the law specifies, when thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make the answer of peace and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee. And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. So that's the ancient rule that they were to follow with the heathen nations. So here is a nation that's not a heathen nation. It's a fellow city of Israel. And certainly if they were to try to make peace with the heathen nations, then they should definitely try to make peace with a city like this. So this is a city and a mother in Israel. So she says, why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of the Lord? This is a part of what the Lord has given his people. This is a part of the inheritance of the Lord. The Lord has blessed his people by giving this city. Why will you swallow it up? And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. I really am not trying to destroy. I'm not trying to be somebody that's of that nature. Although he just recently, very recently, killed Amasa in a brutal murder, but yet nevertheless he portrays himself now as being one that will not swallow or destroy. Verse 21, the matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. So those are the terms that Joab lays out to the woman. You give me the man that we've come after, you deliver Sheba to me, and I'll depart from the city. My purpose is not to destroy this city. I do not want to bring any more harm here than is necessary, but we must have the man Sheba. He has caused a rebellion against the king, and we must put this down. And the woman said unto Joab, behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall. So the woman says, okay, we'll see to it that this is done. You will have his head thrown to thee over the wall. Now, the woman had another job at this time. She had to sell the other residents of this city upon the idea of overpowering Sheba and putting him to death and delivering his head to Joab. So verse 22 says, then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom. So she uses her wisdom. She uses her reasoning power. She uses her ability to explain what their predicament is. Went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. So they did listen to the woman. They did heed her advice. They did cut this man's head off. They put him to death. They stopped the rebellion right there, and they cast it out to Joab. And of course, not very much is said here about what actually took place. Just the very barest of details are given, but we know that there must have been a lot of work on the part of this woman to persuade this people to overthrow this man who was such a threat that he stirred up the whole nation against him. So now Joab no doubt knew and recognized the head, the face of Sheba, and he knew that he then was put to death. And he blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent, and Joab returned to Jerusalem unto the king. So Joab and his army returned to Jerusalem, very successful. Although they haven't had to have a battle and destroy a city, and this was due to the wisdom of this woman who had a treaty, had an agreement with Joab. She talked to him and came to some kind of an understanding about what had to be done to spare the city. It was spared, and so they were able to return back then in a most successful manner, having completely put down the rebellion of Sheba. This is the end of the story of Sheba, the man who rebelled against David. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.